March 5th, Saturday. This is the GNSO Standing Committee on Improvements in the Amethyst.
Morning, Lori. We will start in 1 minute. Morning, everyone. We can start our meeting. First meeting we have this week. I think we are the ones who are kicking off, in fact. Can we start the recording? Okay. So then we first have the roll call. Yeah, we go around the room. And I will start to my right, Angie.
Angie Graves from the Business Constituency. Thank you.
Lawrence Olale Robots from the Business Constituency.
Wolfgang Knoben from the ISP Constituency.
Rudy Vansnik, ANPOC.
Julie Headland, ICANN staff.
Mary Wong, ICANN staff, and I'm going to hand it over to our newest member of the policy team, who is also going to be supporting the GNSO, so be nice.
Good morning. David Tate, also from staff.
Sarah Bakke. Ooh, is it working? Sarah Bakke, Registrar Group.
And we have Laurie, who is on the Adobe Connect and on the phone.
Good morning.
Morning, Laurie. Next on the agenda is the regular question about changes in the SOI. Is there anybody having any changes to announce about their SOI? Seeing none, then we can kick off with the first sub-team report, sub-team A, that had the task to look into the question about motions and amendments and friendly amendments. I would like to thank Wolf Ulrich for finalizing the last meeting we had in the sub-team A. I think we are at the final stage that we can bring the report to the council. We have to present it first today.
So, and this is Julie Headland. So this is the report of the subteams to the SEI. There will be an update of the SEI to the council, but not to present the results of this task.
Thank you, Julie, Rudy, for the transcript. So maybe we can go through the report that is in the Adobe Connect for the moment. And the first issue we had to tackle was about the seconding of a motion. And the team agreed that for every motion there must be a seconding before the vote. And that's what is actually written in the procedures. There's really nothing new to announce here. And the second question that came up was, should it be somebody from the same or a different stakeholder group or constituency? And again, we agreed that there is no specific requirement to have a seconder coming from a different stakeholder group or constituency. The third issue was about the deadline of the motions that needed to be seconded. and again, here we have been agreeing that as based on the flowchart that was provided by ICANN staff, the motion needs to be discussed. Till the moment it comes to the council for voting. And there is no need to have a secondment before the council meeting takes place. I think I'm right, Wolf Ulrich, that the discussion can go until the council meeting itself, and at the council meeting, the motion should be seconded. That's the time lapse we need to respect. And there is no change compared to what the actual process defines. Yes, Wolf Ulrich?
Yeah, thank you, Rudy. Wolf Ulrich Knoben speaking. Well, to be accurate here, it was that, you know, as it is under issue one, the second, the motion should be seconded before the vote. But to be clear, the motion is to be discussed at a council meeting. So we said we were of the opinion, well, to say the motion should already be amended, seconded before the discussion takes place on that meeting. So that means the motion is going to be provided on a 10-day period, isn't it, Mary? Before the council meeting, yes. And it could be discussed on the list before that meeting, but if it is going to be called at the meeting for discussion, then it should be seconded that time, not just at before the it's going to the vote. The reason is to avoid unnecessary discussion of the motion in case it is going to, after the discussion, nobody is going to second it. So to be clear, very clear with that. And this should be reflected in the rules as well then. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich, Rudy Van Snick for the transcript. But that's, I think, what is actually written in the procedures today, that you have the 10-day waiver for the motion that can be discussed up till the moment of the council meeting. And at the council meeting, the first thing to do is to have a seconder for the motion before you start having discussions on that motion. No?
I'm not sure whether it's in the procedures right now or whether this is to be done. That is our proposal to be added to the procedure. Thank you.
This is Julie Headland for the record. Right now, just as a reminder, so one of the tasks that this that the SEI performed at the request of the council was to document the informal process that currently exists with respect to motions and amendments. And then the discussion ensued from there on the four identified issues in the issue request that came from the council, which is what the subteam had addressed. The question that also remains is, do we then, does the SEI recommend that the procedures as they've now been documented and reflected in the flowchart, should these be incorporated into the written GNSO Council operating procedures, because they currently are not there?
Thank you, Julie, for the clarification. Rudy, for the transcript. So I think we can move to the fourth issue that was on the list of the subteam, which says... it's about the time limit of the deadline for submitting amendments to allow each stakeholder group and constituency the adequate time to discuss them, rather than to have the council deal with what could potentially be substantively new subject matter on the fly during a council meeting. And when should the motion be deferred in certain circumstances, example giving competing amendments. So the team decided that or agreed that there is no specific requirement for a deadline for submission of amendments prior or during the discussion of a motion. I think we have a status quo at that level. There's nothing that will change the current process. I think with that... correct, we covered the four issues. I'm just missing a page. Never mind. Oh, yes, Wolf Ulrich.
Thank you, Rudy. Wolf Ulrich, Norman speaking. Just to add something, so the reason why we did that, so we discussed it on a team, so whether the amendment should be in place before the motion is going to be discussed at the council meeting. We didn't see that as a real practical way of doing it because, you know, from our experience on council, it's often happens that there may be at first misunderstandings with regards some councillors don't really understand the motion or some phrasing of that, or they have idea that this kind of phrasing is not what is not meant what they expected it has to be. So that is coming up just during the discussion on the council, and that there should be an opportunity also to amend a motion at this time. And not just having a strict deadline before the motion is going to be discussed. So we would like to leave it a little bit flexible more to the council in order to discuss motions. But it is open and should be discussed also then on council level what is the meaning from their side. And so that was our opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Bolf Ulrich. Meanwhile, I have seen other people joining the room. Are there any questions or any comments at this point on this first report of Subteam A? Maybe it's good that those who joined us in the room will. I will go around the table and start with Amar.
Hi, Amar. I just walked in. I'm with the non-commercial stakeholder group and primary representative of the NCUC on the SCI. Thanks. And council liaison.
Stefanie Milan, also with NCUC.
Rubens Q, GNSO Council.
David?
David Cake, NCUC, Alton.
Klaus Stoll, NBOC, NCSG.
Thank you. So we have a full room almost. Good. So coming back to the report of Subteam A, I don't know if there is any question or any comment on the proposed report that we will present in about an hour to the council.
This is Julie Headland. I don't think that there was a plan to present the report to the council. The update to the council in the slides that we prepared really just says these are the two issues that the council this one that the Subteam A addresses, and then the chair-vice chair elections are the two issues that the council has given to the SEI, and then we just. The SEI provides an update on where it's at, indicating that it's discussed this. But the SEI would still need to decide, for instance, should then these procedures, these informal procedures relating to motions, should they be incorporated into the GNSO operating procedures. That would be yet another step because we do have some language drawn up, but there's a certain level of formality, I think, when one draws up language for the operating procedures that, of course, staff can assist to do. And then that would have to be reviewed by the SEI. And then the SEI would need to go to a consensus call because it does operate under full consensus. And then once that happens, and these are the steps being presented to the council today, then the changes to the operating procedures would go out for public comment. And then once, then finally, we'll be ready to present to the GNSO Council.
Thank you, Julie, for the clarification. I have seen the hand of Wolf Ulrich.
Yes, thank you. So, I couldn't add anything. So it was more detailed by said by Julie. And so also I would suggest, well, on your presentation to the council, just talk about the status, what we did so far, so where we are with that, and what we are planning to do, so according to that rule. So I think that that is enough if we agree all here. So, and if the question for this meeting was, you know, did you understand what the team was doing? Do we need some more discussion? Are there additional ideas from those who couldn't participate in the team meetings and so on, as usual? So, and then we could proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich, Rudy, for the transcript. I don't know, Angie, if you have any remarks as you are part of that sub-team A.
I'm in agreement with the conclusions that were reached. Thanks, Rudy.
Thank you, Angie. So I would propose we move on with the second report, sub-team B. Who is the leader of that sub-team? Is it Anne? Yeah, Anne is not able to join us, but we can take the report on the Adobe Connect, and I will go through it as it is in front of us now. It's on the discussion about the chair and vice chair elections, the issue we all know that happened a few months ago. So the first question that is on the table is, must the GNSO chair be a continuing, not new, incoming councillor? Should there be a new incoming councillor be eligible to stand for elections? And based on the section 2.2b, which provides that a candidate for GNSO chair does not need to be a member of a house, but must be a member of the GNSO council, with the ICANN bylaws prescribing that the council member's term begins and ends at the conclusion of an ICANN annual general meeting. So section 2.2b, as phrased, would seem to limit candidates for the chair to only incumbent continuing council members. And the sub-team agreed that a candidate for GNSO council chair does not need to be a member of the house, but must be continuing, and that's between brackets, it's something we need to finalize, continuing or incoming member of the GNSO council. And that's what, between the brackets, is mentioned, continuing or incoming, and that are the changes for the GNSO operating procedures. I don't know if there is any discussion on this. I know that Wolf Ulrich was also in that team. Yes, Wolf Ulrich?
Thanks, Rudy. Thanks, Rudy. Before discussing, if I may, so I would like a little bit outline the scene, you know, the setting was because why we discussed that. Because, and I'm very happy that a number of councillors are here, you know, in the room, because we discussed that, and this the problem arose during the last election of the chair and the vice chair, the chair of the council, especially in Dublin, and we had a long discussion after that about how to deal with that and how to improve that, and that the output was then the mandate to the SCI to deal with it and come up with questions and proposals on how to deal with that. And that's the history of it, and I do hope that we can get input also from the various houses of the council who were available and have seen the drama of election last time. What we did in the team is and staff at first did from coming from the mandate which was given to us to elaborate some issues, some questions which came up from that mandate, and these are here packed in those one, two, four issues, or three or four issues. So that is the basic of our work, and there were some we were thinking it's relatively easy, but we discussed extensively. And so that is what happened here. So the first one is then that we say for a candidate for council chair must not be a member of the of a house. Yeah, and important was that because the council at the chair election meeting is just the new council shall be, so with all the newcomers and the new NCAs and all these members. So it should be given opportunity also to those newcomers to stand for chair election, not just the incumbent ones. So that was important to us, and that is reflected here in what we proposed with regards to the issue number one. So just to make that very clear, that is issue one. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich, for the clarification and explanation about the reason of this discussion. Rudy, for the transcript. But still we have to take a decision on the naming of continuing or incoming. And as you said, you are preferring to have the word incoming rather than having that it must be a continuing member of the GNSO Council. That correct? That the correct feeling that you, the dream prefers to? Yes, Julie?
Actually, I think the change was that it's not a choice between continuing or incoming. Continuing or incoming was the language that would be suggested to be added. So prior to that, it read, but must be a member of the GNSO Council. The addition would be then must be a continuing or incoming member of the GNSO Council, which then does allow the incoming members to be considered as well as those who are continuing.
Thank you, Julie. So the next, I don't know if there is any discussion from the present councillors on this. Maybe David?
David Hector. Other than to say, no, this is I'm in full agreement, this is a very sensible change. The situation will arise quite often when incoming councillors will be already very well known to the council, and we have every confidence in their suitability for the position. So, this is a very sensible change that removes essentially a sort of pointless bureaucratic limit.
Thank you, David. Rudy, for the transcript. So issue two is a bit more complex. Is there a gap to be addressed when the vice chair's terms end at the same time as the term of the chair, and no chair is conclusively elected by that time? That's in fact what happened at the last AGM. And section 2.2F says that for the vice chairs to serve as an interim chair until a successful election can be held, if a new chair is not elected by the conclusion of the ICAN annual general meeting at which her term ends. However, the procedures are silent as to what happens when one or both vice chairs' terms of the council, which are set in the bylaws, also end at the particular ICAN annual general meeting, which was the case. The bylaws state the regular term of each GNSO council member shall begin at the conclusion of an ICAN annual meeting and shall end at the conclusion of the second ICAN annual meeting thereafter. Each GNSO council member shall hold office during his or her regular term and until a successor has been selected and qualified, or until that member resigns or is removed in accordance with these bylaws. So this is what is written in the procedures and in the bylaws. And the team has been taken into discussion that issue, and there is agreed that there's a suggested new language for the GNSO operating procedures. In the case where both vice chairs' terms on the council end at the same time as the chair, and no chair is conclusively elected, this procedure would apply. Each house should designate a new or continuing councillor, including the voting and non-voting NCAs, to temporarily fill the role of vice chair on an interim basis, not as an elected vice chair. These individuals will co-chair the chair election, and once the election is completed, their service in those roles would end. Candidates for the chair would not be eligible to serve as designated interim vice chairs to avoid potential conflicts of interest. That's what the team has been discussing and agreeing on. The action that should be taken, discuss with the SEI whether the procedure would apply only when both vice chairs' terms end, and to include when only one vice chair's terms end, the update to the GNS operating procedures accordingly. So that's the stage where that subteam B actually is on that issue. Is that correct, Walpoli?
Yes, thank you, Woody. That is exactly the case. Just to explain a little bit, we would like to have it as to be made as easy as possible. So that means there shouldn't be a big process, you know, behind that in case this happens, so that both vice chairs' terms end the same time and the chair's term is going to an end. So to understand, so we use the word designation, not nomination. So that means there is no shouldn't be a formal process behind that. Just, you know, people in that case, it happens, just huddling together and saying, okay, this one should do that. It could be the incumbent vice chair. It could be anybody from that house. It's our proposal just to do that job. So that's behind that. The other question which should be discussed is, should that just happen in case both vice chairs end? The consequence would be if we do that, that in case one vice chair's terms end, the other vice chair shall be the only one performing the election. So that is behind that. But that could be discussed, whether we need another vice chair also from the other house or not. So this is status. Thank you.
Thank you, Bolfurich. I have seen the hand of Amr. Yes, Amr?
Yeah, thanks, Rudy, and thanks, Wolf Ulrich. I completely agree that in the unlikely, hopefully, event that we go through this again, or the GNSO Council goes through this process again, the process for each house should be very simple and straightforward, because there's a gap that needs to be filled. The council will be devoid of any form of leadership. But I'm to be honest, I'm not very confident that the two houses of the GNSO can do this very as quickly or efficiently as may be needed. Designating a candidate as a temporary vice chair is also is not necessarily something we could do easily. And I was wondering if, and I'm just thinking out loud here because I've only been seeing this for the past couple of days. I was wondering if there shouldn't perhaps be a provision for even if an outgoing vice chair, and by outgoing I mean that the current vice chair is not just ending his or her term as vice chair, but also leaving the council. I think it would be a lot more straightforward and a lot simpler if this individual would be allowed to continue on an interim basis, as opposed to a house trying to appoint a temporary leader. I think that would make things more straightforward, although there is an issue, I know, of term limitations. But these are extraordinary circumstances and may require extraordinary solutions to make sure the council does not waste time or slow down in doing its work. The other point I had is I was wondering what the relevance of the non-voting NOMCOM appointee is to house designations. My understanding is that the non-voting NCA does not belong to any of the two houses, so probably shouldn't be mentioned here under the second agenda item, unless I'm missing something. It's understandable why the non-voting NCA would be in the first issue, because he or she should be eligible to be a council chair. But I'm just wondering why it was mentioned under the second term. Thanks.
I have seen two hands. First, Julie, and then Walpoli.
I will just note two things. Because the terms are designated in the bylaws, there is a provision that can be called upon. It is described in the bylaws and also in the GNSO operating procedures of a special circumstance where one might be able to continue in one's term, the council's term. Generally, that special circumstance is left to the discretion of the House. So, for instance, if there are no other suitable candidates, then, you know, someone might be allowed to extend. But that has to come to a vote. I think it's a simple majority vote in the Council for that to occur. It does not actually specifically apply in a case like this, and so the SEI could perhaps decide whether or not there should be detail in the operating procedures that could say that the special circumstance would apply in a case of, such cases we're describing here. The other thing I'll note is that with respect to the inclusion of the voting and non-voting NCAs, that was actually language that the subteam agreed to include, specifically discussed and agreed to include. But I'll defer to Wolf Ulrich if he has something more to say on that.
Yes, Wolf Ulrich.
Thank you, Julie and Rudy. I agree, Amma, so we have discussed that also, you know, these possibilities, but just to extend the term of the so far vice chairs, in case, you know, the first thing is those two who have to, or the one or two who have to do the job, they have to agree to that. That is, they have to be in agreement. So that's one thing. So there must be a question to them in a kind of designatory kind of what else, yeah? That's one thing. On the other thing, we were thinking designating doesn't exclude this case. So I understood you, if I understood you correctly, you were asking whether we should just mandate this process in that way. Those are the boys that have to do the job. So and full stop. So no discussion on council. Well, it's a straightforward way. You know, so if they agree, okay. That was discussed that way. So and we were thinking about also if those council, those vice chairs will not be available after that to ICANN or to the GNSO or so that. What is going to happen then? So we have to do something. That's one question. The other question was the non-voting NCA doesn't belong to any house, but each house should be given and can be given an opportunity, well, also to include them, him or her, well, in that process, in this designation. Why not? He's also a member of the council and can do the job. So that was not to exclude somebody, just to exclude people who are standing for the chair election, so we, to not to have a conflict of interest here in this sense, but not any other member of the council should be excluded. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. I see, Amar, you want to comment, and then David?
Thanks. Just a follow-up question, because I'm actually not entirely certain of this, but Wolf Ulrich, the last point of the non-voting NCA, are you suggesting that a non-voting NCA is eligible to be a vice chair representing a house, or are you just suggesting that they should be allowed to be included in the discussion within the house to designate a temporary vice chair? Thanks.
Well, if I may, so thank you for speaking. Well, this is up to the house procedures. If they have in their procedures, which we don't have, you know, but if there would be something which allows them, well, to designate a vice chair or to nominate the NCA as a non-voting NCA as vice chair, they could do that. It's up to the houses. And, for this kind of designation and the role of this vice chair for this job is just the role performance election. It's nothing else. So that's what we understand. There shouldn't be any task, any further task allocated to that interim vice chair. So we call it vice chair, but because it should be designated by the houses, but it could be, well, it could be somebody performing the election, not in the role of a vice chair, I say, but just doing this job.
Thank you, Wolf. Ulrich, I have David in the queue now.
As far as I'm aware, I'm pretty sure I'm the only person here who's been in this position of being a vice chair, had to take over after a failed chair election. I think that where it is possible, that it is almost certainly a better idea to have vice chairs continue in their roles rather than elect a temporary replacement. There absolutely will be circumstances where that is not possible. We can't compel vice chairs to keep doing it if they don't want to. But where possible, I think to simply have people continue in their role is almost always preferred. We avoid a political, we avoid having to do a House election in circumstances that are likely politically complicated. But there is often significant work that needs to be done in that period. The chair election process is mandated to take a fair bit of time. We can't do it overnight. So there will be at least a month where these vice chairs are acting not just overseeing the election process, but having to provide actual leadership for the council. Certainly this year, some relatively significant decisions had to be made. I mean, not dramatic ones, but we had to deal with things like scheduling of, some very major votes and things. And things to do with, meeting procedure and so, meeting details and scheduling people to come and talk to the council and so on. There can be a fair bit of work to be done, and I think having people who are already have a working relationship with the staff in that role as well will also help keep things running smoother. Having to bring people into that role of dealing with the chairs do only for 1 month, I think is going to be almost always a not, a less helpful idea. So I just wanted to say, I realise that there are fairly significant implications of having someone who is no longer a council member continue in that role, and I think that merits further discussion. But where a chair is a continuing council member, vice chair is a continuing council member, I think we were almost always better served by having them remain in that role. So that's just my comment. And I would like to see a process where that is the default rather than a possible outcome. That's my comment. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Wolf Ulrich, you want to comment?
Yes, I fully appreciate this. And I, that was, our first approach as well. Make it easy, keep it simple. And I understand the incumbent vice chair are the ones who were dealing with that all, and they know the best. So could we, if you think about that, there's one position, well, to make it mandatory in that way, so more that way. The other one to keep it flexible to the council in terms of if those vice chair may not be available. If we put some words into that proposal, like including the voting and non-voting NCAs, but preferably the incumbent vice chairs or similar, in this direction, which leads the council in this direction to think about and tell, okay, this is the easiest way to do that, or how would we proceed to doing this? Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. I see, Mary, you have your hand up.
Yes, hi, this is Mary Wong from ICANN staff, and so following up from Wolf Ulrich's point, I think the question then for the SCI and obviously for those who are providing feedback on this as it's going through the decision process is how much do you, it's not just how much specificity you want to add to the operating procedures, that's one issue of the language, but also how much discretion you would want to give to the houses, because our understanding from the staff side that behind this proposal is that it would be the houses that would have the full flexibility, and that could include, and it does right now say, Dave, as you pointed out, that any house, one or both houses, could say, you know, in this particular circumstance, the new non-voting NCA is, in our opinion, the best choice to be interim vice chair. I think the assumption is that that may not be the most likely of events, but that ability to make that choice is being recommended by the sub-team to be given to the houses. So that's, as Wolver is saying, that it's sort of almost a complete pivot from where the sub-team started, which is closer to what David is proposing. So that's just something that we thought we should point out, that that should be the consideration. So going to Wolf Ulrich's suggestion, there could be something generally prescriptive to say that, you know, to take into account all the circumstances, but that in general, it probably ought to be someone who is a continuing rather than a new council member. That's not what we're necessarily recommending, but in some ways that would be the halfway point. But that's really just a question of how much discretion you want to leave to the houses.
Thank you, Mary, Rudy, for the transcript. But I think that there is probably some work still to be done in this specific case. There are so many possibilities here that I think, and I have the feeling that we need to have different steps and in the process to clarify what if, so that we can have a response for almost every possibility in this issue. I see, Amr, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I did raise my hand, but I hadn't noticed the time, so if we're short on time, okay. I generally really like the direction where everyone's taking this. I think we all want the same thing. If the NOMCOM appoints a non-voting independent appointee to the council who doesn't belong to any house, and one of the houses under these extraordinary circumstances finds that this NCA is an appealing option, then the NOMCOM probably did a really good job in its appointment. But again, I'm a little concerned with the balance of sort of giving a house the flexibility of taking an action in a situation where that exists more or less because the House failed to take an action in an election, and sort of balancing that out with trying to keep things running smoothly on the Council. So I'm wondering if sort of decreasing this flexibility with the House in the operating procedures may help towards that end. And again, I stress these are extraordinary circumstances and they may require extraordinary solutions. Julie pointed out earlier that if an outgoing counselor who is a vice chair could possibly continue on an interim basis, this would still, according to the bylaws, require a vote by the House. And again, this is a constraint that provides the flexibility to the House but still does not allow for the council business to continue as smoothly as it potentially could. But again, these are all just thoughts, and I'm hoping the sub-team will take them into consideration. And so I'm not really making a concrete suggestion right now, but yeah, just food for thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. I see a hand up from Rubens Kuhl.
Rubens Kuhl, for the record. One of the things that we should strive for in such a situation would be predictability. So we could add rules that have predictable outcomes in case House couldn't appoint a vice chair, like defining that the oldest man or woman in the chair becomes the vice chair. So we can add some last resort rules that in case the House can agree to something, that rule comes with a predictable outcome. So that possibly useful for ongoing future of the Council. But that's just a suggestion so the SCI group can take it in and consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Rubens, Rudy, for the transcript. I think that, indeed, as the situation is that in reality we don't know if an election is going to fail, so it's conditional. And some predictable situations would be good to help defining how to get out of the problem, as you don't know if it's going to fail the election, so you don't know if you need this special process being kicked off, yes or no. And as David was mentioning, it takes some time before you have the things on the rails. It can easily take 2 months to go to the process and of elections of the chair. I am just thinking about, is there a requirement that says that you need two vice chairs to be able to accomplish the elections, or can only one vice chair do it?
One will do fine. The problem is, without a chair of any kind, you essentially have no ability to even put things on the council agenda, which makes things a little complicated. I think actually we could probably have an election without a chair of any kind. If we, I think that would probably be within the rules. But you essentially can't get any council business done in the meantime. The council would grind to a halt, as it would have no one who was able to agenda a meeting. So that's my understanding. I'm not 100% sure whether we could, how we would deal with having a meeting, or whether the council could appoint someone to chair or something like that. But it certainly would be well outside the existing rules to get anything done at all. So, but mind you, there's no need to have two. One would be fine.
Okay, thank you, David. Ruben, is that still an old hand or a new hand? Oh, sorry. So we are close to the hour, to the end of this meeting. Perhaps it's good that we consider that there is still some discussion needed to get through the definition of how this process will take place. I'm just wondering, is this something that the sub-team B would do as a team, and then come back to the SCI with a report on how to proceed that allows us to give a hand to the sub-team B again, and you will be able to finish it within
2 weeks.
Okay, good.
Sorry, before you're speaking, as we are going to call for a meeting after the ICANN session, so the week after, I would say. And then it will need one meeting, I think so, for this aspect. Yeah, and then we can come back. Yeah.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. So I think we can then end with the presentation of the reports. The last agenda item is what are the next steps, and I think it's clear that one of the next steps is Sub-Team B goes forward with. Yes, sorry, Wolf Ulrich.
We are not finished with the report. There are two other items, two other issues with regard to the publication of the results and the question of the timetable, which is also, I think, which needs sometimes to be discussed about the timetable of the election procedure itself. I think the GNSO started at 9:30, isn't it? So is there a possibility to extend by 5 minutes or so over the time, over the hour, or is it?
I'm looking to staff to see if we can extend with.
This is Mary Wong from staff. On the official schedule, there's no meeting starting right now, but there might be an issue in terms of the facilities that we have for remote participation and recording. So I'm looking over to. We can continue for another few minutes at least. So. Please, go ahead.
Okay, so, Wolf Ulrich, I'm giving you the floor.
So, just briefly. So, sorry, though, if somebody has to leave, so please. But so the issue number three was, you know, just the the method for posting election results. So because it was written in the procedures in a very informal way, the board should the board should be informed in an appropriate way. So we suggested, well, there is no need to change the procedure about that. However, there be a requirement for staff to follow up on every election, whether successful or not, to publish that that result and to send a note to the full council enclosing the results. So that came from, you know, last time it was not clear. So after when we started the discussion, what was the real result in voting? You know, how did it happen? So it should be made available as soon as possible. After that, I think there is a time period is given in the procedure. And so the question is just, should it be sent, should the secretariat, should it send a council, or should it be published? Publishing means it shall be put to the GNSO website. So that is the status we discussed. So, so we are open, well, to if there's a feeling, well, publishing is a more transparent way, then we put that into the report. Thanks.
Anybody having any opinion on the proposal? I'm looking essentially to the councillors.
Just this is Amr. Just has there been a problem in the past with how? I'm not clear on this. Has there been a problem in the past on how councillors are notified by election results or the board or? What exactly is the problem we're trying to solve with this question? Thanks.
Sorry, it's for Ulrich. But it was just the last time that the results have not been available. So so I came to that so when we started the discussion. So it's more or less a reminder, well, to do so and to follow up that. Yeah. So, thank you. A friendly reminder. So coming to the very last one. So, Julie, could you put up the timeline? So that might be interesting. So just with regard to the timeline, it should be taken into consideration from the beginning where the nomination period for the various constituencies, houses also is going to start until the election takes place. In between, that there is room given for internal discussion, for internal discussion with the candidates, also for the newcomers of the council to get acquainted with what's going on and to know about the election and also to know about the candidate. And that's why we put that together. It's a little bit unclear to me to read, Julie. Is this okay? I can follow on the screen here. So, Juni, you did that from the last time, you know, because you put dates here in it, coming from the last election. Is that? But you also counted the days backwards from the election. Did you see? Did you?
Yeah. This is Julie Hedlund for the record. So what I did is I took the timeline as it stood for this most recent election and then projected it as if we were looking at the next election, so where those dates would fall. Alternatively, one can do it as I've shown at the bottom here, where you just say, well, you know, in any election, you know, there'll be X number of days to the election that the timeline is announced. Procedure and timeline is announced. Then 60 days, the non-com selectees are announced. You know, and 60 days also, there is the House nomination, you know, selection period. That's going to be a period of 60 days then. And then 30 days before the election, the House submits their nominees. At least 18 days before the election, the candidates make their statements. Then during the ICAM meeting where the election falls, there are meetings with the candidates, and then, of course, we end with the election itself. So there's two ways to look at this. You could actually look at hard dates for let's see what would happen if we plan for the next election, or you could say, well, just in any election, these are the number of days. And really, they're somewhat arbitrary because I selected them based on the amount of time that was allowed the last time around. It's possible we could say, well, actually, we think there should be more time for candidate statements or more time for House nominees or less time or whatever. But that's where I started.
Thank you, Julie. Amar?
Yeah, thanks. This is Amar again. Just a quick comment on the timeline. The timeline will become very important, I believe. I mean, clarifying the timeline and making sure all the stakeholder groups understand that will be very important in the future, particularly if a change in the operating procedures is made that allows incoming councillors to become eligible for the chair elections. And I say this because particularly from the non-commercial perspective, our elections run rather late. So by the time this election timeline may begin, the non-commercial stakeholder group may not even know who their incoming councillors are. If this timeline becomes obvious and changes in the operating procedures allow incoming councillors to be eligible for the elections, then the non-commercial stakeholder group may elect to adjust its own election timetable to accommodate this and make sure that their own incoming councillors have an opportunity to participate in the election. So thank you for taking this up.
Thank you, Amar. Wolf Ulrich?
Yes, I would like to suggest, well, if you are clear with that, you know, and you do not have specific questions right now, so you go back to your stakeholder groups and start to discuss that. This is a proposal to deal with it. So it looks like, you know, we give a kind of from a time period from 60 to 30 days before the election starts, takes place, for the houses to clarify it internally the candidates. I know this happens in our part of the house as well, you know, so we have discussions about that within the constituencies, you know, themselves. So you have it more complicated because you are on a house level, you are submitting nominations, yeah? We don't do that. We have elections on a constituency level. So that's different. So please take that into consideration and come back with that, and comment on the SEI list to do that, so that we can incorporate that in our discussion in the group as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. With that, I think we completed the report of Sub-Team B. I'm just trying to not prolong too long, so that we don't have issues with the recordings. As said, the sub-team B will go into a bit more discussion on issue 2 to get this clarified. And the issue 3 and 4, of course, will follow accordingly. I'm just wondering if the case would happen that as the timeline is presented and the final elections result doesn't give a chair, what's going to happen in that case? Is that something that needs to have some attention? If there is no chair elected, could that happen?
No. We're really speaking. So the procedures are very clear, you know, on that cycle. You know, this is it will happen once.
Yes, Amar?
Sorry, I wasn't clear on the question exactly. What is the question? Right,
the
now?
Question is if, as the timeline is presented at the end, if there is no chair elected, what is the process? Is there any situation where that could eventually happen, that you have no chair elected?
Well, you know the rules, you know. There is something happening, you know. So we have to go back to the houses then, and a nomination period is going to be start again with new council, with new chair candidates, and this is all reflected in the in the procedure as well, the council work, if that happens, you know, maybe on hold, you know, during that period, because in case, you know, you have just some interim vice chairs. I'm not sure about that. So, but normally, well, it, I think that's the case. Yeah.
This is Julie Headland. Yeah. So, I mean, we did follow this procedure last time. You know, we did, you know, have a situation where we had no chair. That, you know, the sitting vice chairs, then, you know, you start the process again. The procedures are clear on that. The sitting vice chairs help direct that process. I don't think that any other work continues until you have a chair. I mean, other than you proceed with the election again in order to get a chair. But go ahead, Wolfowick. That may not.
Just last words. I think, well, if you have nominated vice chairs from the houses, they can take the tasks, all the tasks, and perform all the tasks the chair has to do until the chair is going to be elected. So in between. So the question here is then, so what is going to happen if there is not a really nominated vice chair available? But I think that is the next step then. Yeah? Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich, and Rudy for the transcript. I think it's good that there is some clarification. As I noted that in our discussions, it's the chair who calls for a vote. I think we need to be complete in announcing if there is not the chair, it's the vice chair is calling for a vote, or are the vice chair is taking immediately the seat of the chair, or the responsibility of the chair. I think that's something we need to consider also. Because if you look into the wording itself, it always says it's the chair who calls for a vote. What if there is no chair elected? Is it the vice chairs the ones who are going to call for votes for the process in the council? Maybe it's some of the discussions that we need to have in a next call. As I see, we are 11 past the hour. It's clear that there is still some work to be done. And as said, we are going to have a quick update at the meeting in about an hour, I think. I would like to thank already the sub-teams for all the work they have been doing. It was quite intensive, and I personally learned a lot on how complex the process is in the council. And in the procedures, and it's good to have experts like Wolf Ulrich, who was helping us through a lot of discussions and putting up a good proposal. With that, I think we can close this meeting, and we see each other in GNSO Council meetings. Thank you.